Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-County. This morning I have with me an old friend. Oh yeah, he's not that old. He did retire recently. He retired from the Carpenters Union, been a lifetime carpenter. Good guy. Bob Louder from Jerseyville, Jersey County, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Well, welcome, Bob. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Now, Bob, married man?
Yep. Been married for soon to be 38 years.
Good for you.
Actually, real soon, like June 6th.
June 6th, 38 yep. years.
38 years, yes, sir.
First wife or second wife?
First wife,
got to like that. And kids?
Got one son. He's 32 years old. I got a grandson that'll be 11 months old here in June.
Sweet. I bet he's not spoiled rotten.
No. I real handy. They live right next door. They bought the property next door to me, so I get to see him every day. So
good.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
How about you grew up in Jersey County and you went to Jerseyville High School.
Yes, sir.
Right? You got any hobbies, Bob?
Motorcycles? Yep, they're my passion. They always have been. I started riding dirt bikes whenever I was somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 years old, and I've rode motorcycles all my life.
Yeah, do you like do the cross-country type?
Or, yep. I mean the. Yeah, the enduros, hair scrambles, trail ride, basically.
Uh-huh. Did you ever race a bit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I raced motocross for quite a few years, and then started doing the off-road thing, and I rode off-road series pretty much all my life since.
When you're racing, isn't that a little dangerous?
It can be.
Yeah. Is there anything you look out for, like when you're racing? Do you want to be in the front? You want to be in the back? You want to be where you want to be?
Of course, you always want to be out front.
Yeah, but you get ran over if you have a wreck.
Well, yeah, but usually in wood, running in the woods isn't nearly as dangerous, I don't think, as racing motocross. I mean, because you're a lot more split up than what you are on a motocross track. I mean, whenever you're racing through the woods, there's times when you're all real grouped up, but not always.
But you got trees.
Yeah, they don't move. But they don't jump out in front of you either.
Well, that's true. Okay, if you think back off the top of your head, in your career as a motocross rider, both in practice and in events racing, how many wrecks have you had?
I can't come up with a number for
Give me
that.
100?
Oh, at least.
200?
Probably closer to 200.
I thought so.
Yeah, I fall a lot. But
the nice thing about motocross, because I had a dirt bike for a while and I rode it, was that I bet I wrecked that thing 100 times and I only had it for like a couple years.
Oh,
but
yeah.
When you go to wreck with it, because you're doing crazy stuff with it, you can let the bike go underneath of you. And just let it go and keep yourself away from it. Versus like on a street bike, you know, you could do it with a street bike, but you got to worry about other cars and other obstacles.
Right. Well, that is the advantage to riding a motorcycle over a ATV or
yes,
because you can't get away from an ATV if you're falling off it. It's probably going to run over you.
Yeah,
Or roll over on top of you. Where you know, motorcycle's a little different.
I had Rick Edwards in here. A while back, and he said that, you know, they sold the three-wheelers, mm-hmm. that is, and then they outlawed them, which those things are dangerous.
Oh, they are killers.
Yeah. And I rode one of those big Honda three-wheelers one time. I didn't like it.
They are hard to ride.
It's a little weird.
Yeah,
when
they
you
don't
go
turn
around a corner or something.
Yeah.
You know, it was just because you tip up a little bit.
Right.
Got a couple of questions for you to share with the listeners, because now you're retired, you know, and there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they both men and women, like my daughter, she loves working on things. She's very handy. She loves building her own stuff. She's a nurse, but she loves, you know, she can build and paint and do things good with her hands. For those that handyman or handy woman or somebody wanting to be a handyman or handy woman, what would be some essential tools that you need to get just to have in your toolbox in order to get a few things done?
Well, a battery-powered kit would probably be one of the most valuable, and that would consist of a battery-powered impact gun, a drill, a battery-powered saw, and a sawzall. Multi-tool. A multi-tool you can do just about anything with. But then as far as just hand tools, just your speed square, your typical hammer.
A few screwdrivers.
Yeah, a few screwdrivers, a couple chisels, you know, a pair of channel locks, a pair of Kleins. You know, like I used to always say, if you got a pair of vice grips and a roll of duct tape, you can fix anything.
Just but, about, yeah. Right. Now, if let's say you have somebody that wants to build a deck, all right, what would you want to tell them? What would kind of a strategy want to suggest as far as deck building goes? If they wanted to build it themselves.
Well, it depends a lot on what kind of elevation they've got. I mean, are they going to have an elevated deck? Is it going to be...
We're going to say this is a deck that comes off of a one-story, like maybe just 3 feet off the ground.
Just 3 feet off the ground? Well, the best way to do that would be to take and build a beam and set a beam on piers and then build your floor joists right off building out to cover the beam. And rather than put the post under it, because a beam running laterally across the deck would support the deck, and it has a better look to me than what a post deck does.
Okay. How about if they want to do a patio and they want to do a concrete pad, any suggestions there?
Well, first off, make sure you have a good base, good solid base, and make sure
like the dirt's good and solid?
Yeah, make sure you use a crushed stone base.
Okay.
Pack it, compact it.
With a compactor, can you do it by hand?
Well, you can, depending on...
Or can I drive it over with my truck?
Well, I'd use a compactor. And then make sure you put some reinforcement wire in it, because concrete does two things. You know, it gets hard and it cracks.
Yes.
And if it doesn't have some kind of reinforcement in it, it's going to be pretty ugly here before too long.
And probably put some reliefs in it.
Reliefs are very good. Make sure you put an expansion joint between the building and the concrete, you know, so that it can move a little bit without cracking at the building, you know.
Would you pin it to the building or not? No?
Probably for a patio, I would not.
Okay.
Now, if I was doing a garage floor or something like that was connected to the building, I would.
Okay.
But with just like a patio slab, I probably wouldn't. I'd put a piece of expansion between it and kind of let it float there a little bit.
So depending on whether you're a handyman or a handywoman, let's say your significant other says, I need you to put up some shells. Anything that you want to suggest on putting up shells?
Catch the studs anytime you can.
How do you find studs? What's the best way to find studs?
Well, they have stud finders.
Okay, but what if you don't have a stud finder? And you find yourself in the middle looking for studs, can't find any. What do you say?
Well, actually, if you can see your baseboard and you can see possibly any nails in the baseboard, if they weren't filled or if they weren't, you know, if they were visible. Typically, the top nail on a piece of baseboard would be in a stud.
Okay.
And once you find one stud, studs are typically 16 inches apart.
Per center, right?
Yeah, per center. And, you know, you can also peck on the wall. Take and just tap on the wall, and you can tell the difference from the sound as you go across the wall on whether it's... Whenever you hit the stud, it'll be solid.
Uh-huh, yes.
And whenever you're on the other side of it, it'll be kind of hollow sounding.
Okay. Item number four, putting furniture together. What do you suggest? If you got something, you got to put it. Everything comes now. You order, it comes packed. Yeah. All packed together. I'm sure you've had a lot of time putting stuff together.
Oh, yeah. Well, you might want to look at the instructions.
Yeah.
Oh. I know men don't like to look at instructions, but I'll tell you what, they send them for a reason. And, you know, whenever you get done and you got extra parts, there's usually an issue.
Yes. How about installing trim? Any suggestions on trim work?
Measure twice and cut at once, because trim's expensive and you don't want to waste any of it that you don't have to. And a good nail gun.
Uh-huh. Is that one of the essential tools?
I would say so if you're doing trim work.
Battery operated or power? Or air power?
Well, the air power ones were always the way to go, but I tell you what, the new battery powered ones work pretty good, and they're a lot more convenient than dragging an air hose around.
They are.
And using a nail gun rather than trying to beat a nail in, especially if you're using hardwood, you know, it's
hard. You have to be careful with a nail gun.
Oh, yeah.
How many times have you seen people shoot themselves with a nail gun?
I've done it several times.
You have?
Yes, I've shot two fingers together. And,
I'm not laughing.
Well, I am. But no, it's, you got to be careful. But they got safeties on them. Don't alter the safety. And Just pay attention to what you're doing.
Okay, and when you shot your fingers together, which fingers was it?
My index finger and the one next to it.
Okay, you shot them together. Did you get a pair of pliers or a hammer and pull them apart? What'd you do?
Well, pretty much I pulled them apart by hand, but then I got a pair of pliers and pulled a nail on out. It was a trim nail. I was nailing two pieces. I was nailing a head and a jam together, and I was holding
it. You didn't just go straight to the hospital? You just pulled it out right there?
No. I just pulled it out and actually went on working. I didn't go to the doctor.
You're a tough son of a gun.
Well, you got to learn a little bit about that. But
any suggestions on ordering and replacing a window? What do you say? What are you thinking?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's so many different types of windows out there anymore. And a replacement window, depending a lot on how your windows went in, on how you want to replace them. You know, I mean, if...
I'm talking about the old windows. The old
double-sash windows.
Double-sash windows, the most common window replacement.
Yeah. Well, the best, I think, probably the most convenient way of doing those is to just measure from jam to jam and get a replacement window that'll actually fit inside the existing jam, pull the sash and the stops out, and slide a new window in it, fasten it in, and caulk it.
Should you allow anything, like... quarter of an inch or something, or
maybe
what would
a quarter.
You recommend?
Yeah, a quarter of an inch to make sure it fits in there. You're going to need a little bit of room to do a little shimming and level and plumb it up. And once it's in there, you know, then after you get it all in, you can caulk it and seal it in real good and get a little insulation around it. You want to get a little insulation around it for energy purposes,
but not too much.
Not too much.
What happens? You get too much in, then the window won't open.
The window won't open. It swells the sides.
I've did that before.
Well, I think everybody has at one time or another.
Okay. Any suggestions? This is a question. Somebody wants to build a house. They want to be their own contractor. Okay, general contractor on it. What would you say if you're going to be a general contractor? What suggestions do you have?
Hire a contractor. I mean, everybody, there's so many people that think that they, you know, if they got a pickup truck and a toolbox and a hammer, they'd be a carpenter. And that's not always true, you know. And I don't think people realize the headaches to have to deal with in building a house. It isn't just building a house. It's, you know, you got to deal with electricians. You got to deal with plumbers. You got to deal with roofing contractors. You got to, everybody, if you're going to be the contractor, the general contractor, you got to deal with everybody.
Right. And do you have time to deal with everybody?
Well, do you have time? And it's a scheduling aspect. You know, I mean, you got to be able to look ahead and see that this guy needs, the plumber needs to be in before the electrician needs to be in, or vice versa. And then, you know, of course, you got to get the plumbing done before you can get the flooring done. And you just get it's a nightmare. It can
okay,
be a
that
nightmare.
Being said, what are some strategies about picking a general contractor? What would you say? The things to look for in a general contractor?
Well, look at their background. Look at what, you know, look at, do a little research on them, see how they're
some of the things they've built.
Yeah, some of the things they've built, and some of the
references.
The references, and, you know, also, I mean, did it take them 3 years to build this house, or did they get it done in 6 months, you know?
All right, another question. What can the homeowner do to save them money as far as a general contractor goes, and what could they do? If they want to help, what can they do to help in the process to save them some money?
Well, they know what they want product-wise. They know what kind of fixtures they want. They know what kind of, flooring and everything. To get all of that done in advance, knowing what you want. And if you can buy any of this product ahead of time to where, you know, the contractor's just doing the scheduling and the coordination of getting it put together, would help considerably.
Yep.
And that would probably be a lot more of a benefit to the homeowner than trying to build it themselves.
Yes, and probably just getting all your ducks in a row that you can get in a row, get it all decided, don't change things, Change orders are the big cost.
Oh, yeah.
You start change orders.
Yeah.
That's where
and
it starts.
And that's the other thing
up.
To look for with a contractor. You know, you might get a contractor that gives you a really affordable price on building a house, but what is he not included? Pay attention to the contract, you know, because, you know, did he not include doing, you know, did he not put any of the cleanup in his contract? And you're going to be responsible to clean up all of this guy's mess.
Yeah, but that'd be one way you could save some money if you said, hey, I'll take care of cleanup. Well, and you'd make them work faster.
Oh, yeah. It definitely could be. And if you're willing to do that, that's a big benefit.
All right. Now, your years. How many years did you spend as a union contractor?
Oh, well, over 30.
Over 30 years?
Yeah.
What area, what direction might you advise a young person who's thinking going into the carpenter field? What do you tell them?
Well, if you can get into the interior work, is what I kind of specialized in. But the thing with a union carpenter, you know, whenever you get into the apprenticeship, you learn all of it. You don't just learn the interior trim. You don't learn steel studs and drywall. You learn it all. You go through the whole thing and learn it all.
Do you go to school for this or just on the job?
Apprenticeship. Okay. You'll go through apprenticeship school, but the advantage to getting into...
Do you get paid while you're through it?
Yes.
Okay.
You get into the apprenticeship. You work every day. You learn. You get paid, but you also go to apprenticeship school. As you go through the apprenticeship, it's a 4-year apprenticeship, and every 6 months you get an advancement to where you move up a percentage in the scale, pay scale, and you know, and you learn it all. Now, I mean, you know, there's guys that have a knack for trim. I mean, they're good at trim work, but they're not too good at framing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and vice versa. I know excellent carpenters that frame carpenters that could frame just about any roof, anything you wanted them to build. But if you put them inside doing crown molding around a building, it might not look that good.
They struggle with it.
Yeah, because that's not their cup of tea. Same way with steel studs and drywall. I mean, there's guys that can put up steel studs and drywall, and whenever it comes to putting in a door, they're going to struggle, you know. But it's all in what a guy has a knack to do.
Uh-huh.
But...
And you can change over the years if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can go in this area and then, change up like we do. And I'm sure you've had many different jobs over your career. What was the most interesting job you had where you'd come home every day and go, Nan, wow, this happened today. This is really cool. I learned something today. What would you say that was?
I like, one of my favorite was doing commercial door and hardware.
Commercial door hardware.
Commercial door and hardware, you know, all these magnetic door locks, all of that kind of stuff. I enjoyed probably the most out of just about anything. I just enjoyed working. I enjoyed being a carpenter. I probably wouldn't have retired whenever I had retired, but my knees were so bad and I had to get my knees replaced. And I miss working. I do miss working, but I don't know if I miss it enough to go back.
Hey, what's the most thrilling, scariest, dangerous job you ever had to do?
I was building an elevator shaft on the side of a gambling boat, and we were on the water side.
Oh, shoot.
And we were
You can swim, though, right?
I can a little
bit. But it's tough with a tool belt, right?
Yes,
right?
It is. Well, we actually had a lift, a 60-foot boom lift, chained down to a work flat that was floating alongside the boat.
Oh, yeah.
And we were up on the side of the boat putting that elevator shaft, and every time a barge come by, we had to swing out so that the waves wouldn't slam us into the side of the boat. But that was probably the scariest.
Was it?
Yeah, I that was a little bit nerve-wracking, yes.
What was the toughest? Was that the toughest, too?
Yeah, I would say
hardest
that.
Hardest and toughest, scariest, all in one.
Yeah, I'd say that'd rank right up there.
This is something that I mentioned before we started this interview, and get your opinion on it. I would think a young guy, unlike us, you know, who are older, but a young guy, it would be a big asset in today's world, in today's labor market, if a young guy could speak Spanish with all the Latino labor that we have, to be able to communicate both in English and in Spanish. What do you think about that?
It would help. It would help. You know, it's kind of odd that you bring it up, because our Carpenter magazine that we get every month from the Carpenters District, actually from front to back is in English, and from back to, or from front to the middle is in English, and then from the back to the middle is in Spanish, so that Spanish-speaking carpenters can actually read the magazine.
Right.
I've had a lot of Spanish-speaking carpenters on my jobs. Probably about half of my career, I worked as a field superintendent, so I ran the jobs, and I had a particular job in Louisiana that I did that I had 30 carpenters on the job, and there was only two of them that could speak English, which was real hard to communicate.
Yeah.
I actually put a translating app on my phone.
Yes.
So that I could communicate with them that way.
Yes.
And the two that could speak English spoke English pretty well, but the rest of them couldn't speak any at all.
I see.
I really think some of them could speak a little more than they wanted you to know, but, you know.
Well, Bob, it's been a pleasure having you in today. We're ran out of time. One last thing, or anything that you want to add to this interview, a message that you'd like to send out to anybody, any place, anytime, what do you got to say?
Well, I tell you what, keep in mind that pretty much anything and everything that there is out around you pertains to a tradesman. I mean, you know, this building we're sitting in here was built by just about every tradesman there was. I mean,
right.
Between carpenters, electricians, whoever, the road you drive on, the bridge you cross to go across the river, anything a tradesman built.
Yes.
A tradesman had something to do it.
And it's a good trade.
And
it's a good honorable.
It's a good, if you can work with your hands, if you have the ability to work and fix things, build things with your hands, you'll never worry about working a day in your life.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, to me, there wasn't anything any more gratifying than to be able to look back at something I built or had a part in building and say, you know, I worked on that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that. And, you know, the best thing is I didn't have a $300,000 tuition bill over my head either.
There you go, for
you
sure.
You know, and, you know, you can very easily make six digits in the trades.
Sure.
And it just depends on how hard you want to work.
Yes. Bob, is there anything else?
Well, yeah. You know, everybody needs to keep in mind that for every five tradesmen that retire, there is only two waiting in the wings to take their place.
So it's wide open opportunity for anybody that wants to get in.
Wide open. It's not like it used to be. I mean, it used to be hard to get into a trade, to any of the trades. You had to work at it. I mean, now with the labor force being what it is, if you went to a district council and told them you wanted to join the apprenticeship, they'd probably sign you right up right now today, and you'd probably go to work tomorrow.
Well, but, Bob, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and have a great day, and I'm sure you got plenty of things to do.
Oh, I do.